Welcome to episode 15 of Practical Defense, Home Security, Part 5. Welcome back to another episode of Practical Defense. I'm your host, Alex Haddix. You know, we're getting pretty close to finishing the series on home security. And in our last episode, we mentioned that you should keep your cell phone with you in the bedroom at night in the event that there's a power outage or if some home invader disables your landline phones so that you can't call out. We also spent some time talking about dogs for home security and how they act. In this episode, we're going to talk about weapons in the home and a little bit about garages and protocols that you should use for answering your front door. Now, weapons are a touchy subject, but when you think about it, if someone has broken into your home, they probably have a weapon. It could be a lead pipe, it could be a knife, it could be a gun, it could be just about anything. You know, they're breaking the law, and they're knowingly entering into a potentially dangerous and conflicting situation. So, you know, most likely they're going to bring a weapon to protect themselves. They may not use it, and they may not even want to use it, but there's a good chance that they have something to protect themselves, and they could really care less about you, how you fare at the end of the exchange. You know, you can't think of someone who has the gall to enter your home as some fashionable cat burglar or a James Bond type. Most likely the person is there to take what they can sell quickly for drug money, and that they're probably already intoxicated either with drugs or alcohol or both, so their judgment is, you know, significantly impaired. Or worse yet, they're actually there to hurt you in addition to taking your stuff. So now that this person's already in your home, what are you going to do? Well, the first thing you need to do is call 911 for help. And then you're going to hole up and wait until they arrive. You know, you want to lock yourself in a room and hunker down. You know, once you've called 911, you're giving the police the responsibility to detain and arrest the intruder. If you call 911 and then go after the intruder, then you can get yourself into quite a bit of trouble, aside from the actual physical danger you're putting yourself into. Now, of course, if the guy comes after you once you've dialed 911, you are well within your rights to defend yourself and your family. Theft and property damage, though, is a tricky area, and it totally depends upon your local laws and statutes, and if you go to trial, it even depends upon the mood of the jury. Now, I always tell my students to remember that things are things, and everything can be replaced. You know, and grandma wouldn't want you to get yourself hurt or killed over the family china or some ring or bracelet. You know, just let it go. You know, no thing is worth your life. And also, all these types of situations are always fluid. They're always changing. There is no right or wrong or perfect answer. You know, every home has a unique floor plan and every situation is different. So you have to use your own good judgment to protect yourself and your family members. You know, and one protective measure is to build a safe room in your home. Now, this doesn't need to be the $50,000 bunker that you saw in the movie Safe Room. What you need is a designated room that everyone in your household knows about and knows that that is the meeting place if something scary happens. And the choice of the room is that it needs to be defensible. You know, in many cases, all you need to do is replace that normal inside flimsy hollow door with a good solid core door like the one you have for your exterior and throw in a good deadbolt. You can even replace the wooden door frame with a steel frame so that it can't be kicked in. You know, I know a couple of people that after being robbed in their homes actually swapped out their bedroom doors for solid core doors and, you know, they deadbolt them every night as a permanent practice afterwards. You know, it helped them sleep better and made them feel safer. You know, some experts even recommend stashing weapons throughout the home, and, you know, this makes a lot of sense. However, you need to take into consideration children. You know, kids and weapons do not mix. And you have to consider, even if you don't have children in your home full-time, what about visiting children? You know, the last thing you want to do is have a child pick up a gun and play with it. If you choose this route, you know, and I'm not necessarily recommending it, you need to have the weapons quickly available, but they need to be secure enough that a child can't get to it. And that's a pretty tall order and just may be impossible in your home, so please keep that in mind. You know, stashing weapons throughout the home may not be a good option for you. And again, you have to use your own judgment and always keep children safe. Now, I said it makes a lot of sense because you may not always be in the one room where you have your weapon stash when a home invader decides to come calling. Now, remember that I live in Los Angeles in Southern California. And although I've lived a lot of other places for a short time, I've spent most of my life here. And I've been through several riots, including the Rodney King riots in 92, and countless earthquakes, including the big 7-pointer that we had, the Northridge quake back in 94. You know, when things hit the fan, you never know what time it's going to be, or where you're going to be, or where you need to get going. So, growing up in earthquake country, we always had flashlights stashed around the house. You know, so if a big earthquake hit, things get tossed around. You know, they get tossed around a lot. You know, tables get thrown, drawers fly out, pictures come off the walls, books come off the bookshelves, and entire bookcases actually even get knocked over. And it's a huge mess. You know, in the 94 earthquake, even flashlights that we had hung on chargers attached to the wall popped right off with the shaking. You know, they just bounced against the wall, and it was so violent, they just popped right out of their holders. So what we did, though, was by placing lots of flashlights around the house, we had a better chance of getting to one when everything was messed up. And also, in recent years, I've actually swapped out flashlights for chemical light sticks. Flashlights break, the bulbs break, batteries go dead, and if you don't change the batteries often enough, they actually start leaking and destroy the whole flashlight. So I found that chemical light sticks are a pretty good alternative. Now, I use the military spec light ones, light sticks, and the chemical sticks, and they're about $2. They're totally non-toxic, and they actually activate for a full 12 hours. And when I say 12 hours, I mean that's before they start to dim. They actually give off light after that, but they're not at full capacity. And the other thing is, they have a shelf life of about 5 years. And if you're ever in my house, if you open up any drawer, you're going to find at least one light stick in it. And we also carry a couple in our cars. Okay, I went off on a bit of a tangent there, but the point is, you never know what time or it will be or where you'll be in your home when an intruder decides to show up. So that trusty baseball bat that you always keep at your bedside when you sleep, it might be on the other side of the house and up a staircase if you're watching TV when you hear that window break somewhere. So that's what you might consider stashing defensive weapons throughout the home. And again, it may not be a good option for everyone, especially those with children. Another thing you should consider is your attached garage as a potential entry point into your home. Now, I say attached garage because in one episode we talked about how the garage for my friend was not attached. It was actually a separate building. So what I'm referring to here are the garages that are actually built alongside and attached to the home, and that there's a door linking the inside of the home to the garage. And that depends upon how your home was built and where it was built and, you know, the time, the design, and everything else. But what happens is, if you do have an attached garage with a door connecting it, a lot of people discount that door because it's, you know, in some ways, technically, on the inside of your home. And why would you lock an interior door? But the truth is, you need to secure that door. Now, your garage is segmented from the home with fire-hardened materials, at least, again, depending upon when the home was built and the specifications. But in most cases, the walls that line your garage are not the normal interior walls. They're filled with other denser materials that, you know, will prevent a fire from spreading from the garage and moving into the house. Because the garage is, you know, where you store cars filled with gasoline, where you have your solvents, your paints, and other types of flammable materials, and you want to segment that and keep it from spreading to the rest of the house. In fact, when my house burnt down, the fire started in the house, and the only things that were saved from the fire were the stuff in the garage. So it actually worked both directions. The house burnt down, but the things in the garage, most of them were actually saved because of the fire-hardened walls. So it works both directions too. But the other thing is that this denser material also has a property of sound dampening. So if someone breaks a window in your garage, you might not hear it as easily as if someone broke a window in your living room. And also, you know, who can honestly say that they changed the code of their garage door when they installed the new remote opener? You know, how about if you bought the property or just moved in? Have you changed the code? You know, and if you're not the first owners, Do you know if the home builder or the person who installed the garage door changed the code then? You know, very few people can actually say that they've done that. Now, a few years back, quite a few years back, I remember seeing an expose on TV where a reporter bought the most common type of garage remote and then left it on the default settings and drove around his neighborhood to see how many garage doors he could open. And the number was really large. I don't remember how many there were, but it really seemed like there was a lot. The other thing is, I do not recommend or endorse doing what that reporter did, because it, invasion of privacy, it also might have just been illegal. So, unless you have changed the code to your garage door and locked the door linking the inside of your home to the garage, you have a soft entry point there. So you need to lock that door, and you might even want to install in a deadbolt. You also want to check to ensure that the door is a solid core door. And again, because, if it's just a soft door or hollow door, it can be easy to kick in. Now, but by most fire codes, it should already be a heavy fire retardant door. But again, depending upon when the home was built and where it was built and the codes, it may not be. Okay, now we're going to switch gears a little bit from the purely mechanical to some human elements. The first one is, how should you answer your front door when someone comes knocking? Well, the first thing you should do is not open the door until you have established the identity of the person on the other side and you've determined that they're not a threat. So, how do you do that? Well, if you have a remote camera, check that out first. Also, use the peephole if you have one. And once you have a visual on them, what you want to do is you want to back away from the door. Remember that in any conflict situation, distance is your friend. So don't stay right up against the door. If they kick it in suddenly or shoot through the door, the closer you are, the more likely you are to get hit. So what you want to do is you want to back away 5 to 10 feet, and that's about 2 to 3 meters. You also don't want to stand directly in front of the door. We call it squaring up. You don't want to be squared up right in front of the door again, because it gives them a large target. What you want to do is you want to take a step to the side. And again, this is to create distance and an angle, so that if something comes through the door, you're less likely to get hit. So once you've backed away from the door, how do you answer it? What you want to do is just a simple, who is it? It's just enough to get the ball rolling. And the key here is to listen, not to just what they say, but how they say it. Tone can be a huge indicator of intent, just like body language is. So if you don't like what you hear, send them away, and you've never exposed yourself directly to the unknown. And here's a personal example. I was home alone one afternoon when I received a heavy knock on my front door. So I went to investigate. And as I passed a room on the way to the door, I noticed that there was a large man through the window in my driveway, and he was standing back a bit. And so that really sent my intuition screaming. I was like, two guys, large knock on the door. So I didn't even bother getting close to the door. I just called out, who is it? And the response I got was delivery. Now, that, with everything else, I absolutely knew that there's something was wrong here. Everything was off. Why were there two guys? The knock was too heavy and too aggressive to be, a normal delivery person. And then the answer of delivery, that's not normal. A UPS or FedEx delivery or postal service person, they always identify themselves. When I say, who is it? They say UPS, or they say FedEx, or mailman, or postal service. They never say just delivery. And then I noticed that there was a third person, and that everything was all wrong. So when I called out, who is it for? The guy responded with some name that I had never heard of. I had no idea who that person was. So I said I didn't know who he was and that he didn't live here. And then the voice changed, the tone changed, and the guy was getting angry. So he says, do you know where he is? So I was like, okay, they're looking for somebody, and they've got the wrong place. And that doesn't mean that I'm safe. It means that I could be mistaken identity. They could think if I looked anything like him, they could think that I'm lying and now they're after me. So I just responded that I didn't know who it was or where he was. Now he pressed further by saying that he was an officer of the court and that he wanted to know where he could find this guy. So I responded again that I had no idea who he was or where he was. And eventually he gave up and walked away. And as he was walking away, I could hear him telling the other guys in the driveway that the address they had was several years old and that I didn't know where the guy was or wherever he was and that whoever they were after. Now, I never knew for certain, but I suspect that these guys were bounty hunters and that they were after someone who lived at my address before I moved in. And they just had, they just had bad information. Now, the thing is, bounty hunters work within the legal system, but they can be a little heavy-handed at times, and they aren't bound by all the restrictions that police are. They live and work in a gray area of the system, so I was just fine with keeping them on the other side of the door from me. Now, the point of that story is to demonstrate that you can carry out a complete conversation and come to a resolution without exposing yourself directly to some stranger knocking on your door. So if you don't have to open the door, don't. And it's far safer not to. Well, so what if someone comes up banging on your door and claims that they need help? You know, either they've been attacked, or their car is broken down, or they're lost. Again, don't open the door. Just tell them that you'll call 911 for them and get help. And listen to their response. Do they respond with, you know, great, thank you, or, you know, okay, I'll just be right here. Or do they say, no thanks, I'll be okay without them, thanks anyway, and then they walk away. So that gives an indicator of what their actual intent was and how desperate their need was. But in either case, you might want to consider calling 911 anyway, because either this person does need help, which is best provided by a trained professional, or, you know, they're running some sort of scam and the police might want to come check them out anyway. But again, you'll have to decide what you want to do should you ever be in that situation. But the key here is don't open the door and expose yourself to a potential threat if you don't have to. Well, that's all I have time for this episode. And next time we'll actually conclude our series on home security. So in summary, we have home invaders. You know what you want to do. You want to call 911. You want to hole up if you can. And if you can hole up, you want to hole up in the safe room that you've built, or at least a room that is fairly defensible. And if it's appropriate and safe for your home, you want to consider stashing weapons throughout the premises, because you don't know when or where or what time something will happen and where you'll be able to get to. You also want to make sure that you lock and secure the door joining your garage to your actual home. And if someone comes knocking on your front door, you don't want to open the front door if you don't have to. It's much safer just to keep the door shut and speak through the door. Before I sign off, I wanted to share some email that I received. And this email comes from Amanda in California. And she actually wrote it with two items, but I'll cover one here in this episode, and then I'll cover the other part in the next episode because it kind of fits in better with what I plan to discuss that time. So, she writes, I wanted to bring up a personal experience that has happened at least twice. My bank is called offering special deals and had my name and phone number, but wanted to verify my social security number to speak with me in detail about my options. They would not speak to me when I refused to give my social security number to them to an unknown entity over the phone, and the telemarketer was pissed. They would not even tell me the first several numbers with me giving the last four. You know, that's a typical occurrence with telemarketers, but Amanda did the right thing by not divulging a critical piece of her private information to some complete stranger over the phone. You know, your social security number unlocks a lot of your personal, private, and financial information, and you should really guard it closely. You really shouldn't give it out to anybody, and you really should not just carry it in your wallet like you do your driver's license. So, great job, Amanda, and thanks for sharing your experiences with the rest of us. Well, that does it for this episode. Thank you for downloading and listening to the Practical Defense Podcast. For questions and commentary, send an email to podcast@alexhaddix.com. That's podcast@alexhaddix.com. And if you ever want to train with me, look me up on the web at alexhaddix.com. Until next time, stay aware and stay safe.